You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
It's been another busy weekend in the NBA. In fact, it's kind of been a three-day weekend if you take off Friday. However, the Jazz were active just a few hours ago, pulling off a three-team deal. We knew it was a foregone conclusion. John Collins would not be wearing a Jazz uniform next year. We'll talk about that three-team deal and more. Joining us right now over the phone, as he does each week, we have James Solis, our NBA analyst. And James, as always, it is great to get you on, and there is plenty to get into here on this Monday afternoon.
I thought about harassing you on Friday to try to get you to record with me, but then I caught myself and realized that you were, you know, you're a family man and you have other things to do, so I left you alone.
You're a scholar and a gentleman, that is for sure. I know that you've also been following everything that's been going down in the NBA heavily, very entertaining on social media as always. And James, while it hasn't been just all this news coming out at once, just bombarding us, there's been a lot of really fun, entertaining, good storylines and player movement that has come out at a frequent pace. We just haven't been bombarded by it. That's kind of my take on it up to this point.
Man, the NBA offseason is really a lot of fun, and especially with this year, I call this the offseason of injuries and apron, right? So many teams are scared of the second apron, and then so many teams are dealing with, like, you know, look, let's be real, catastrophic injuries to their guys where they're going to miss the whole season. The whole landscape is going to change, and I think these trades and these free agent signings are reflecting that.
One player in particular that did suffer a catastrophic injury that we have not been able to talk with you about, it's Damian Lillard, and the fact that the Bucks have waived him. They're going to eat $22 million a year for the next 5 years. That's a story in itself, all to go out and get Miles Turner. But the topic here on the show that I think a lot of people throughout the state of Utah, dating back to Dame's time at Weber State, where's his next stop? And James, I'm of the mindset that if you have a ball-dominant guard, you can put Dame at the two. I think that you're going to get offensive production out of him. As long as you have a ball-dominant one that can kind of handle the show, I think he'd be a seamless fit, and I can see four or five teams that could really use Dame's services. Even if it is just a one-year deal, even if you only get him, we'll say, from April on, I would be willing to take that risk. I'm curious as to your thoughts.
It all depends on the context of what the team needs, right? A team like the Miami Heat, who are just basically talent-starved, sure. I'm hearing word that Boston might want to get on it. And you know what? I don't like the thought of a 36-year-old. I think he'd be 36 at the time when he comes back in a year. 36-year-old Dame, already not a defender, off of what could be a debilitating injury that can be a career ender. I don't like the thought of that. It makes me think Kemba Walker again in Boston. And I'm good, with Tatum already come back of Achilles. But, yeah, there's definitely he's waving stretch. We haven't even talked about the fact that the Bucks are basically paying Miles Turner $50 million, right, with his contract and then the money for Dame dead on the books. You end up paying $50 million a year for Miles Turner, of all people. But, yeah, there's definitely some teams that should take a flyer on him because he could take a vet minimum. He's going to get his money anyway. So but good value in 2 years. But right now, if you want to get him into camp, you get him into your training system and help him rehab and have him in a year. Some teams it makes sense, but like we talked about that apron, it's really tough with just having money on your books.
How many years do you think Dame has left in him, legitimately?
Like, let's be real. Like, again, off that injury, a lot of wear and tear on his body already. Maybe two or three.
Yeah.
Decent level, right? Now, you get him slotted in where he's comfortable just being your third best player, your fourth best player, even a spark off the bench, then you're good. He might have 4 or 5 years left. But Dame just doesn't seem to be that kind of player, and, you know, I'd be shocked if he could make that kind of transition, especially – it's tough. I know, going from an A1 superstar to all of a sudden being a role player, that's a tough thing, a pill to swallow. So if he swallowed that pill, 4 or 5 years, but the way he is now, maybe a year or two. We got to see how it looks after that injury.
I know when you look back at it now in hindsight, the deal did not work out for Milwaukee at all. Yet I still don't believe – anyone can fault the Bucks for what they did in acquiring Dame and what they tried to accomplish with him and Giannis. I can't fault them for that. I know sometimes these deals, they just simply do not work. But even knowing now what I know then, I still think you roll the dice and you take that risk.
This reminds me of the Kawhi Leonard and Paul George situation for those years in the Clippers where people want to, you know, they talk bad about it because they didn't win anything. But at the time, it made perfect sense. So same with the Dame trade. It made perfect sense. We thought we were pairing A1 kind of superstar guard, which Dame was, with a superstar, you know, power forward. We thought their two-man game would be unstoppable. And I think when they were on the court together, the numbers looked okay. Obviously, it didn't work. Chris Middleton's body fell apart, and they tried to trade for Kuzma. So it didn't. It never just played out. I think maybe they have the wrong coach. They don't have the right supporting cast around them. So it didn't work out. But like you just said, I think 10 times out of 10, you make that deal if you're the Milwaukee Bucks to bring in a guy like Dame in to play with Giannis.
Yeah, we can't forget they made a coaching change when things were going fairly well in Milwaukee.
Right, and that was such a – I almost feel like the Bucks are so focused, hyper-focused on maintaining Giannis's happiness that sometimes they're the blackjack player who hits on 20, right, instead of, you know, maybe letting it ride. I think they kind of overthink things a little bit. And now to the point where I think they might have went, you know, they've kind of hit a tipping point where I don't think anything they do now is going to really save it. To go from win that championship to Dame, which is fine, that they made the coaching change, but now they just traded, you know, they got rid of Dame and they brought in Miles Turner. And then the cast around them is kind of mismatched, not a lot of shooting. It doesn't look like I think they're on the downward trend in Milwaukee. So, I think the window might be slammed shut for the Bucks.
Let's jump over to the Western Conference, and we'll talk about another window that is shut completely as the Phoenix Suns try to now reverse course a bit. We know they've dealt Kevin Durant. We also know that they are exploring options with Bradley Beal. It seems like he is more than likely heading towards a buyout. When you take a look at this contract, there's two seasons left at $110, almost $111 million. He also has a no-trade clause. It almost seems like Phoenix has next to no choice here. They have to move on from Bradley Beal. He's also got a player option, if I'm not mistaken, at the end of this next season, and that player option somewhere around $58 million. He will most certainly be wearing a new uniform next year, and someone may be able to get him on the cheap. You start looking at some of the teams with knowing the buyout numbers and what Beal is going to get just for leaving Phoenix. He may be able to sign for a vet minimum, keep a team under that first apron. You look at it, 32 years old. When he's played, he's averaging, I think, close to 20 a game, if I'm not mistaken. Defense is a little bit suspect. But if a contending team can add Bradley Beal for next to nothing, I think you have to do it. I'm curious as to your thoughts on what's next for him and where Phoenix has to go in this deal.
Such a very, very interesting path for Bradley Beal, and everything you said was pretty much correct. I think another issue with Phoenix is that they have to negotiate with him to leave some money on the table because they already have another stretch contract that they're still paying out. And you can only pay out a certain percentage of your cap on dead stretch money. And if they did him right now, they'd be over that. So they literally can't do it until he negotiates and leaves some money on the table. So you're right, man. The window's not just shut. It's boarded up. They put concrete in. I think they basically put a bunker over it. And it's dipped in steel. Everything's just boarded up in Phoenix. They got to start all the way over. But as far as Bradley Beal, you're absolutely right. I think, again, man, I think the stink of losing in Washington for so long might have really be clinging to him because I don't know if he learned bad habits or what, but he just doesn't like a winning basketball player. The numbers look fine. You're right. I think he's averaging like 17 or 18 a game off the bench. The shooting splits were fine. He doesn't defend. He's not a great playmaker. He doesn't have a really good nose for the game other than scoring. Yeah, if some team can give him $5, $6 million a year to come play, 100%. I think the Clippers will love him. Again, Miami, certain teams, he would really be a big benefit to. I just don't know how much can he contribute to winning basketball because we haven't seen him do it in, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years. So that's the big question.
You know, give a shout-out to Devin Booker. During this entire process, right, during this entire offseason, Kevin Durant going, Bradley Beal going to get bought out, completely new direction. Unless I have completely missed it, I have not seen or heard Devin Booker say a word about the direction of the team, where he fits in. Maybe this has just slipped under the radar, James, and I haven't seen it. But from where I'm sitting, I give this guy a lot of credit because here's an all-star who, you know, they thought they had a championship window. It's closed completely, and he's been completely quiet about it all offseason.
Not just an all-star. There was a time when you would have said that Devin Booker was arguably the best two-guard in the NBA.
Yeah, correct.
They just made a finals run a couple years ago. Like, we all still remember him in the finals. So, and it's funny because it's very interesting how, on one hand, everyone was pushing Dame to leave. And I'm with you, though. I give Devin Booker props because maybe he is happy being the homegrown kid. He's got his money. We know that. And I think, from what I heard, he's ready to sign another extension for another huge chunk of change. And maybe he's happy being a franchise cornerstone. And I will forever beat the drum that there's nothing wrong with that. I would have loved to see Dame finish his career in Portland, even if they didn't win anything. Even if they were just a 45-win team every year. Because I think that means something to the franchise, to the city, to the NBA. To have a touchstone in the NBA. Here was Dame Lillard. Didn't win anything, but he was the guy in Portland. And Devin Booker might be happy doing that. We'll see in a year or two. Right? I think this is his 10th or 11th season coming up. Maybe things change. Maybe he's given the ownership another runway to see what they can do for a couple of years. And that he might change his tune, but I like to see it too. I like to see Devin Booker really represent and hold on to Phoenix.
Again, James Hulish joining us right now as we talk NBA basketball, the free agency, and trade movement. In fact, there was a trade earlier today, James. We got to jump into the Clippers and the Miami Heat and the Utah Jazz all involved. So John Collins is going from the Jazz to the Clippers. Kevin Love, Kyle Anderson, and a 2027 second-round pick from L.A. on their way to Utah. Then you also have to take into consideration Norman Powell being a part of this deal as well. When you sit and you break down the logistics of this trade, first off, my initial response, Jazz fans, hey, they were told there would be no tank. This is exactly a tank. It's a cap-cutting move, although I applaud getting rid of John Collins. I didn't understand when Utah acquired him to begin with, so now you move on from this deal. But at the end of the day, when you look at this three-team trade, and also I got to throw out that Kevin Love will never suit up for the Utah Jazz. He is going to get bought out. They're going to waive him, and he'll have a new home. Initial thoughts to this three-team deal?
No, I heard about the deal. I didn't think about the fact that Kevin Love would never play there, which I guess makes sense, right? He's pretty sure he's on a league minimum. He's a pretty cheap contract. Because I was thinking a guy like Kevin Love, vet presence, he might give you still 8-8 on a good night, still can stretch the floor, really knows how to pass that ball. I thought he would help the Utah Jazz a lot. Him and a guy like Kyle Anderson, those are like the exact type players you want when you have a high-volume guy like Ace Bailey, and you already have Lauri Markkanen. They bolster a team that's trying to make a playoff push. But I also understand where you're coming from. And like you said, it was almost like a lateral move because John Collins, he puts up numbers. He's very much, I mean, you were talking about this earlier, like a Tim Thomas type who the numbers look fine. Rudy Gay type, the numbers look fine, but is he helping you win ball games? Or probably not. He's just kind of putting up numbers. So I'm going to hold judgment until we see what else Utah has in the bag because – I mean, hey, they keep saying they're not going to tank, but they aren't really making moves forward. Ace is a huge addition. Let's see what they do next.
What about John Collins in L.A.? What do you think of this move? Where does he fit in? Your thoughts on the Clippers going out and grabbing someone? As you said, the numbers can be there, right? I mean, this is one of the – he's a great lob threat. There's no doubt. I mean, he can drop a 20-point game. I mean, that's not unheard of for John Collins. I'm not truly a fan of his game. I never really have been. But where do you see him fitting in with the Clippers?
And again, the Clippers, I feel, are nearing some kind of end game, right? They pushed this Kawhi thing as far as it can go. They're still depending on James Harden, who I don't think is a very dependable number two kind of guy. I think this is another lateral move because we know that Norman Powell was huge for the Clippers last year, but he needs a ball in his hands. He's going to score, and that's really about it. So they just moved the scoring to the power forward position. I think he will fit well with Zubac, who wants to operate around the low box. And we know John likes to shoot threes, likes to slash, crash the weak side. So I think he'll fit fine. The question will obviously be defensively. We know Ty Lue is one of the best defensive coaches in the league. And if anyone can extract some defensive juice from a guy like Collins, it's going to be Ty Lue. So this, I think, is a watershed moment in John Collins' career. Can he actually make an impact on a team that's going to go into the playoffs, which we think the Clippers will? So, they're gambling. I think they're almost out of moves in Los Angeles. I think this is one of their last moves.
Thoughts on Kevin Love before we close out this talk right here. Love going to be on his way out of Utah. At least that's the report. He'll never play a game for the Jazz. Where does he go? I still think he's got some basketball left in him. I don't believe he's going to retire this offseason. Where could Kevin Love go and still have an impact?
I think he has a lot more minimum. Sounds crazy to say this. He might be a lot more impactful than a guy like It can be more impactful, a guy like Bradley Beal. Again, he's all right defensively against big bangers. He still can rebound. He can still shoot the ball. He's not going to hurt your team. Look, if Jason Tatum was healthy, I would be clamoring for them to get Kevin Love this year. And even now, Boston needs a big man. any contender could use him. I mean, it'd be scary if he went to it. Oh, you know what? We haven't really talked about it, but we know that the Denver Nuggets are having issues with Jonas Valanciunas, Big JV.
Valanciunas, yeah.
Valanciunas. They're having an issue with him, and, you know, it's weird. That whole situation is weird. So maybe they pivot and bring a guy like Kevin Love. Kevin Love could play 10, 15 minutes as a backup center. Just fine. So he'd be a nice consolation prize for them. Any contender would any bad team would use him too, but we know Kevin Love wants to go win. So, yeah, any upper echelon team right now would love to have a Kevin Love. If the Knicks can make a play for him. Any team that's trying to actually win and needs spot minutes from a really savvy veteran, he'd be great.
We don't need to get into the logistics of the seven-team trade. We know, for the most part, the landscape of it, right? It's an historic seven-team deal, the largest in league history, which does send Kevin Durant and Clint Capella on a trade with Brooklyn, Golden State, the Lakers, Minnesota, Phoenix. You look at all the moving parts. I think I'm more fascinated at how creative the league has gotten, right? Because you always talk about the first apron, second apron, and it's just kind of changed the game. The fact that teams are getting so creative, almost to help one another out in a seven-team deal. It would take us 15, 20 minutes to go through all the logistics of this. But the fact of the matter is, Houston gets Kevin Durant and Clint Capella by executing a seven-team deal. I think just saying that, right, the headline of that in itself is completely fascinating to me.
I'm reading through the whole list of that transaction, and it's a giant paragraph.
Oh, yeah.
I think somehow David Roddy, the power forward David Roddy, is somehow included there somehow, too. Alex, too. All these names. So, yes. I wonder if the Rockets are kicking themselves instead of getting Clint Capella. They'd love to have Kevin Love because Clint's about washed up himself. So, you know what? But good on the Rockets. I think, if I remember correctly, the Rockets are still, like, under the first apron even after all these moves. So really, really good work by them to reshape that roster for the number two seed in the West. And, yeah, the NBA, look, this is what the NBA voted for as far as the Board of Governors. This is what they wanted, the whole second apron, and it's actually working exactly the way it's supposed to. It's making teams realize if we're not contending, if we're not right on the cusp of a championship, I can't spend that kind of money like the Warriors were spending when they had their championship team. And even if we are on the cusp of it, if something happens and we got a guy hurt, we can't keep spending this money on a year that we're not going to go to the finals. So teams have to be very conscientious. Teams have to be very smart, very shrewd with their money.
James, as far as some of the other things that have gone down over the weekend, maybe something that we haven't touched on yet, what was something that really sparked your interest? Something that you looked at and said, okay, this is an interesting deal. Could be big, could be small, but something that really piqued your intrigue as far as the NBA offseason. Have you seen a move over the last 4 or 5 days that has kind of got that creativity rolling, something that you liked?
I like Gershon Yabusele going to the Knicks. That was a really solid pickup because I think he's a really good player, really good fit for them. Cam Whitmore, he's a tantalizing player for the Rockets. I think they just realized we don't have the minutes and the room for him. They basically shipped him out for nothing. And I'm going to give you guys your credit. Fascinating story, DeAndre Ayton going to the Lakers because he's a very talented player, number one pick. They need all the help they can. I think it's going to be a boom and bust move for the Lakers. So that's probably about it, man. But there's been so many just little moves that around the margins. But those are the ones I think.
I think last week when you and I were talking, the big storyline at that particular time was LeBron, and was his time done in L.A. And a week ago today, I thought, yeah, his time's done. Right? You don't make a statement like that if you're not moving on. But as the days have gone on, and now we have Summer League that's off and rolling, James, I look at this, I say LeBron can't go anywhere, even if the Lakers want to move on from him. He's not going anywhere until at least the trade deadline. Now, I'm not saying he's going to end the season in a Laker uniform. I don't think that the Ayton and LaRavia deal is enough to keep him happy. I still don't think it's a championship-contending roster, although I do believe they're top five. I think they're top five, top six in the Western Conference as constructed. But it's not enough to keep this guy happy. This has been a storyline that's kind of died down a little bit, though, over the last 7 days.
LeBron is so funny to me, man, because we know arguably the best player in the NBA history. He loves the dramatics.
Oh, he does.
Loves to troll the media. I think someone posted on Instagram a picture of him and somebody working out in Cleveland. He had the hat saying "Welcome Home" at I think some golf tournament, right? And he's just so funny, man. He loves the attention, and that's part of his brand, I think, right? That they know that, you know, if they're talking about you, Was that any publicity is good publicity? And that's what LeBron kind of do. He likes to keep his name out in the streets. He likes to make sure people always kind of know, right? We know he's not going to retire with no fanfare. He's going to make sure that he gets his attention. So, yeah, but maybe it's a nothing story. I think once the season starts, if the Lakers really start off running, it's going to be like, oh, I never meant to do anything. What are you guys talking about? And like you said, though, maybe around the trade deadline, if things aren't going great, we'll start hearing rumbling again.
That deal is easily moved at the deadline. It's not easily moved in July.
For sure. And even with the cap things, if somebody wants to take a flyer on half a season of LeBron, any contender, they're going to have to make the money match. That's the hard part, right? I heard talk about the Knicks. Too many of their – they don't have the smaller contract to stack up, and they want moving their big guys. So, but, you know, like you said, teams pay certain guys big money just to think about cap maneuvering. And moving LeBron and expiring would be very doable in January or February.
Have they done enough in your mind? I think they're a better team. Like, if I look at this Laker roster right now, and I don't think they're complete yet, I do believe this is a better roster now than it was at the end of last season, and this was a 50-win team. The problem is the Western Conference has gotten drastically better, right? So I think if you would have stacked this roster up against the Western Conference from a year ago, sure, they can contend. They were a 3-seed with a lesser roster in my mind. But as good as the Western Conference has gotten, the slight improvement in the roster may not show, if that makes sense.
And so even though the slight improvement, I'm going to say I think that DeAndre Ayton is magnitudes better on this team than Jackson Hayes. And so to think that they did all that last year with basically no center, Jackson Hayes is barely an NBA player to me, that means a lot. And Luka being healthy means a lot. But they lost Dorian Finney-Smith. It's always one step forward, like half a step back with the Lakers. So, again, fascinating to see. Will they have to overtax LeBron James and Luka Doncic? And if that's the case, then, you know, LeBron at his age and Luka with his physical limitations, so at times, as far as under duress, it might be too much. So the Lakers, again, they're going to be, as much as I hate to admit it, they're going to be one of the most fascinating stories to watch this year.
He's James Hola, kind enough to join us as we talk NBA free agency and trade movement. James, league never stops. It seems like it's just an 11-month league anymore, and I know we're going to have plenty to talk about in the coming days. Before I let you go, let's talk about where we can find more of you.
Just all social media. Scottie Pippen was my favorite player growing up, so that's my name is an homage to him. You can find me at Snotty Drippin, where the sky is blue, and formerly known as Twitter. And, you know, yeah, talk basketball. I'm ready to get into some of the summer league and really see how these rookies look. So next time we talk, we'll talk about some of these young players.
I've never asked you this. What was it about Scottie Pippen's game that you loved when you were a kid?
I think because of the fact I knew when he was drafted, not much was expected of him. Sure, he's a raw guy. And then watching him develop from just this raw athlete, all arms and legs, he's like right there with Michael Jordan, and they're like, you know, the quote unquote the two Dobermans on defense. And he, you know, Mike retired, and Scottie was able to, you know, drag his team deep in the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, I love it. I love that it's his game. And now looking back, you know, he's current Scottie Pippen. I cringe a little bit, but Scottie back then just seemed like a really kind of like he humbled his game. And he really, like, he was just all around, man. He was a really good player.
Yeah, I'm always fascinated to hear about the favorite players pundits and analysts had when they were growing up, because there was always a player that got you involved in the game, right? Like, being a lifelong Laker guy, in between Magic and the Kobe Shaq era, it was Nick Van Exel, right? That was my guy growing up, was Nick Van Exel. I don't know that you meet too many people who that's their favorite player, but for folks that were Laker fans, that's all we had at that particular time, man.
Right, and you know what? With Mike was all power and fury, and sure, he glide and beauty, but Scotty was just so long, and kind of game was kind of smooth, and you know, he started doing the pull-up threes and transition, the long hands would flip out. So just the style of play and the way you watched him play was aesthetically more pleasing to me than Mike.
He is James Hola, so he's kind enough to join us. James, I look forward to the conversations each time. I appreciate it again. Can't wait to do it soon.
Always glad to join the maestro as you do your thing, brother. Thanks for having me on.
We've got to pause for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up again from the Sutherland Studios here on 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.